This is the iPhone LA Podcast, Episode 8, for June 9th, 2008. Welcome to the iPhone LA Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and this is the show that discusses all things iPhone. For the latest iPhone news, tips, and reviews every day, check out iPhoneLA.com. And joining me tonight for our special keynote wrap-up edition, we have Mr. Bill Palmer from iPhone Magazine. Hey, Bill.
Hey, great day in iPhone history, huh?
Yes, it's iPhone 2.0. That's the way I look at it. And next from the Mac cast, we have Mr. Adam Christensen. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Long day. Definitely.
Yeah, between work and Apple, it's going to prove to be, and I still got ways to go.
I'm going on like 3 hours of sleep, so not because I was excited, just because I stayed up too late and then I had to wake up really early. But, you know, that's how it goes. So, and joining us from the Mac Observer, we have Mr. Jeff Gamet. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, I'm feeling your pain with that no sleep thing.
Yeah, you get up super early, don't you?
I do. I'm usually up by 5 in the morning.
See, that's about the time I go to bed.
Yeah, I know. I can tell on iChat, right about the time I'm sitting at my desk, you're going away.
Yeah. Actually, it's been about 4 a.m., but, you know. Hopefully I'll get to bed fairly early tonight. And finally, we have a very special guest. And, we finally got him on from the Mac Observer, Mr. Dave Hamilton. Hey, Dave.
Greetings, sir. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. This is one of my favorite podcasts, so I get to be like all fanboy and giddy about being on.
Well, I've always said that you're going to be like our Dvorak.
Ah, all right. Cool. Well, I better put my... I have to put a different hat on now.
You take off the fanboy hat. Just say iPhone sucks.
Don't give him any ideas.
And then what's your blog? It's DaveTheNerd.com.
DaveTheNerd.com, indeed.
So you have to say that a lot and twist your mustache and go, yeah.
I hope not to disappoint.
and occasionally throw out a good like pulled pork recipe or something like that.
Exactly.
Can we talk about pork brains instead? There's just more sodium there, and I'm really all about high sodium content.
Let's try to
Did
stick with
that. New iPhone looks like a toilet seat.
Put a handlebar mustache.
Okay. Well, this is going to be a good show. I can already tell. So let's just get on with it. First topic, and it's all WWDC keynote, wrap up stuff. So, first thing
that's tomorrow, right?
Yeah, tomorrow, and we're gonna stream it, I think. So, but the first thing we're gonna talk about is the iPhone SDK, and that was already unveiled, I think, back in March. But there were a couple interesting things that they talked about, such as background processes, and they demoed quite a few applications. So, who wants to start on the SDK stuff?
I think the background process discussion was background processes suck.
Right. Yeah.
was what I got out of it. I don't know where everybody else heard, but that was the synopsis I got.
Yes, that's what it was basically. And I think that you were the one who kept saying how much they suck, even before Scott Forstall told us how much they suck. So you want to give us the rundown on that?
Oh, you're talking to my famous friend. I don't think I took that hard a position. I just thought that there were ways around it, and I understood the disadvantages. So, I mean, essentially the disadvantages are pretty obvious. You're going to have apps running in the background that are using up memory, and they're using up system resources, and they're using up network access. So, when your phone is suddenly not performing with the current app you're working with, as you would expect it, you're going to be sitting around wondering why and not really knowing these background processes are going on. And that was kind of, the synopsis of what he was saying.
Right.
Yet, what was great about that was they obviously recognize, you know, and I'm sure they heard a lot from developers that there's a big need to be able to do certain things. So I thought they had an interesting solution. I'm not so sure developers are going to be really thrilled about it, but
okay,
and it'll work for some and maybe not all of them, though.
So I kind of get the solution. It has something to do with Apple providing a persistent connection or something like that, where they push information. Do you understand it? I'm sure you understand it a lot better than I do. You want to
into the details, but notification server. So they're going to have a server, you know, that they run and maintain, that there's going to assume, you know, I haven't looked at the SDK, but assume the API calls are some way to call and make notifications to this thing, and it'll get pushed out to the phones, through the IP network. And, it should be pretty straightforward. I mean, you can think of, any web server that you can send a message to, and it's going to know how to go find that phone. And then I would assume there's hooks in the APIs that are going to allow that to come through. And I think there were like four different methods that they talked about.
Yeah.
Four different services.
I think it's three.
Can I just say that I hope they don't use the same bank of servers that currently serve .Mac, because if they do, the thing will never work. And
I heard they're going to partner with Twitter.
So then it will work perfectly, right?
Never.
Never. It will work never. So that's
my big concern, is Apple has not proven that they're able to do that sort of thing on a large scale.
True. They do have that Akamai stuff, although I don't think Akamai could help them with this.
That's not an active thing. Yeah, Akamai is for edge caching, where it's effectively static content.
Right,
this is active connections moving through, and you want them to move through. I mean, you probably don't need it to hit within 30 seconds of you sending the notification, but you certainly want it to hit within, 5 minutes. And if any of us have .Mac accounts and have ever tried to sync stuff, I mean, it's a crapshoot. So I'm worried about this, to be honest.
It's going to have to happen a lot faster than that, because they were talking about it, for things like an AIM message or something like that. So you have an instant message, you're going to want to be potentially notified of that. So I think they had badges, so they can update the icon to show, hey, you have a bunch of messages waiting in your SMS. They mentioned text, audio alerts, which I thought was interesting. And what was the other thing?
That was it. You hit all three. The text was the third one.
Yeah.
Popping up an SMS-like message over the display.
Right.
I thought there were four.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it was three.
Pretty sure it was three.
All right.
But I slept. So,
Right.
Exactly. But, you're going to want that to happen pretty fast. And, it looks like everything was about push. I mean, this is just another push technology. So, they're going to push a notification over this service.
I bet it's not push either. I bet, like the old days with the pagers, it may be the kind of thing where it's a timed sync, or even more, just a pull, where every minute or something, the iPhone wakes up quickly, goes out, pulls anything new from the server, and then shuts down its connection, or goes into power down mode, so that it's not constantly burning time up on the network. Similar to an IMAP idle connection, where it kind of gets into a sync state, where it just wakes up and listens, and if nothing happens, then it kind of goes back down. It's a similar thing.
Yeah,
I think that's what I would guess.
I think, and maybe I'm wrong, I thought he specifically mentioned push. He called it a push notification server, didn't he?
He did, but people call IMAP idle email push, and it's really not. It's just, we're all going to be in sync with each other, and I'm going to wake up when you're expected to push something to me. That sort of thing. I think it will effectively act like push, but it would be surprising if it really truly was, because it would mean that the phone had to be on with an active IP connection all the time.
Well, can you explain push for those of us who don't listen to the Geek Gab?
Okay, yeah. So the idea is, and BlackBerry pioneered this, right, on their devices. The idea behind push is you set your phone on, and you can do this with your email client too. In fact, .Mac, Apple's Mail.app supports it, even though .Mac or MobileMe doesn't yet. Where you connect to the IMAP server and you set up what's called an idle connection. And this is all done in the background. And then when new mail comes into the IMAP server, there's actually a little message that's sent out. Now, the message that's sent out isn't your email. It's a message saying you ought to check for email now. Mm-hmm. And then the mail client, be it a phone or a desktop app, goes back and says, yeah, okay, let's fire up a check. And sure enough, in comes the mail.
So the server that pushes out that notification knows what the IP of the phone is?
In theory, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it provides that sort of persistent connection that they were talking about with the service.
Yeah. They'll probably register something even more unique. Like, doesn't every iPhone have some sort of ID that identifies that?
The IMEI. Yeah. And, of course, a MAC address. Well, that really doesn't apply to, over Edge, but definitely the IMEI.
Yeah.
All right. I have a question, which maybe we have an answer to. Maybe we don't. So what happens down the road if Apple says, we don't like how our little, what we'll call it, a push server is working, and they make changes? What's the likelihood that's going to break everyone's application notification system?
Don't they do that every time they update OS 10? Someone's always, messed up because of something that they change. And I assume that they would let the developers know that they're going to change something. But it is a good question. I mean, inevitably, something's going to break when that happens.
But, with as secret as Apple tends to be about their updates and changes, I could see a situation where people have what they consider to be critical applications that suddenly don't get their notifications anymore.
Yeah.
I could buy that.
Don't you think that with Apple selling these apps through iTunes that they're kind of screening? Because it seems like when the apps break that you're talking about, it's usually because a company did something they knew they could get away with on this version, even though they were told not to. And that's not always the case, but it seems like it's usually what it is. It seems like with this, if Apple sees something like that going into the iTunes, they're going to say, no, we're not selling that until you make it. So it's not going to be something that's going to break. At least I would hope. Maybe I'm being naive on that.
Well, are they going to really analyze those applications that deeply? I mean, do you think the developers need to send in their source code when they submit their app to the App Store? I don't know how that works, so maybe that's part of it. I don't think so.
I mean, they have that standard for music. Obviously, it's a lot more complicated, a lot more work, but they're not going to let somebody send in music that's in 172 WMA format weird that's not going to work on the next iPod. So I would hope they would have that standard, especially if we're going to pay $10-$20 million, whatever some of these apps are going to cost.
Well, I suppose you can apply the same idea to accessories, like something that you plug into the dock adapter on your iPod or your iPhone. Those things have to go off to Apple to get a, a seal of approval. So I guess it would definitely apply to, applications in the App Store as far as, that level of, especially if it's going to communicate with this service that Apple has set up for them. So I guess they would check that out.
Yeah, I think go ahead.
I think it's probably like building applications, right? If you layer your stuff on top of the frameworks and you use the right API calls, Apple can change anything they want under the hood, and your stuff still works.
Right. Yeah.
I think it'll be the same here. So.
Hopefully everybody plays by the rules and does it the way that Apple tells them to, and then everything will work out.
Right.
That would be cool.
The other common convention with this stuff is, deprecating stuff that you're going to change. So the other obvious way is they just add to the documentation, hey, this call is changing in the next version. If you're using this call, get your app ready. I mean, that's pretty common in development cycle with everything from HTML to advanced programming languages. They warn you a couple versions ahead of time, hey, this call is not going to work anymore in a couple versions. So that's the other thing they could do.
Right. So, did anybody see, I've spent, most of the day scouring Apple's site after I was done with the stream and all that, just looking for these different bits of information. Did anybody see, in one of the screenshots for the App Store, Twitterific just kind of in the App Store? Like, I mean, nobody's announced anything from Icon Factory. They weren't on stage unless I missed something. They're just kind of there. You saw
that? Talked pretty publicly about the fact that they've got Twitterific coming for the iPhone. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I fail.
That's okay. But I understand. Sure. But we love you anyhow. It's okay. but I understand why Apple wouldn't want to demo a Twitter application during their presentation.
Especially, right then. They would have to have their own fake Twitter server up that, actually works.
Isn't that what we're all using anyhow, the fake Twitter server?
Yeah, the one that's supposed to work.
Right. Although it did perform far better than I expected.
Yeah, I think it did just sort of work during most of the keynote, at least. I mean, I wasn't giving it full attention, but it seemed to be working pretty well.
I think a lot of
they made a lot of changes.
A lot of us assumed it wasn't going to work and stayed off of it anyway, so maybe it did stay up for that reason. I didn't even go anywhere near it. I was like, I don't need that headache today because I knew it would go down, and then it didn't.
Well, did anybody hear that rumor that Robert Scoble is the reason for Twitter going down every time that it does? Because he
I can believe that.
Because he has so many followers and he follows so many people. Whenever he posts an update, or is it everybody? Yeah, every time he posts an update, supposedly, and this is just the rumor that, you know, it just all the servers just kind of get tired from, you know, sending out all those notifications.
So Scoble is like a quantum singularity of Twitter. He has his own event horizon and just kills everything around him, right?
Right.
If your servers
are so bad.
Can we
stand and applaud for that?
Here we go. I don't know what you said, Jeff, but it sounded good. But if your servers can be taken down by one enthusiastic user, doesn't that say something about your servers?
Well, I think it's a combination of all the users like Scoble, and I think, you know, Scoble is easy to pick on for that sort of stuff. I mean, fake Steve picks on Scoble all the time. But, you know, I think it is – I could see it being users like Scoble, you know, taking Twitter down. But, you know, I'm just hearing all the time that Twitter is going to be they're moving to new servers, and it's just, you know, it's going to take a little while longer. I don't want to see Twitter like this, you know, for much longer, because it was such a great service when it just worked perfectly. I mean, Dave, I think everybody here uses it now, and it took me a while. It took a while for Dave to actually get on there, but I think he even sees the benefit of it now.
I do. Yes, I've seen the light.
You have. And would you have a Twitter app on your phone? Not saying that you would have an iPhone, but would you have a Twitter app on your phone?
I would. And in fact, I'll go, you know, so I have, obviously not on this show because I've never been on this show before, but I've said many times that the iPhone's not for me. And part of that, a big part of that was I'm very happy with the third-party email client that I have on my Trio, which is Chatter email. Way more full-featured than the iPhone client and makes it very easy for me to manage mass quantities of email. But the problem is, since the iPhones come out, there are now, and because Safari is, it's got its problems on the iPhone, don't get me wrong, but because it's so good and so much better than any other browser out there, there's all this stuff, including Twitter, that is now something I expect to be able to do because everyone else now can do it on their iPhones mobily. So for that reason alone, the Trio is no longer working for me because the browser in it, I mean, it sucks. You know, I can kind of make it work, but it's really painful and all that. So yeah, I mean, it not only would I have Twitter on my iPhone, but Twitter is one of those things that makes me think, yeah, you know, I actually need to get an iPhone. So
are you, do you want to get this next iPhone?
Yeah, I actually think I will, and I don't want to jump ahead, but there's actually some stuff that we'll probably talk about, features of the iPhone 2.0, that one in particular that will make that jump a little bit easier for me.
I'm glad that you're keeping on topic.
I'm trying. I know what it's like to have somebody derail you, so I'm trying not to do that.
Thank you.
You got it.
So who is excited about Super Monkey Ball?
That looks like it rocks.
It looks like a lot of fun. I've never played Super Monkey Ball before, but it just looks like a heck of a lot of fun.
As addicting as Mario Kart, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And geez, it just seems like it's so accurate with the accelerometer. You never would have expected that thing to just be so ridiculously accurate. I mean, you, Dave, you haven't... I'm sure played with the iPhone enough to realize that, you know, you have to be holding the phone at such an angle to, you know, actually have it register a flip, you know, to from cover flow to back to the
yep.
iPod or whatever. And
yeah,
clearly
that thing spits out more data than Apple takes advantage of in their own apps.
Absolutely. And, you know, I can understand why they wouldn't just have it be so loose that, you know, it's registering incorrectly. So I can understand right. that. But, you know, there were so many applications. Was I, you know, just like dreaming that there were like 10 applications that were demoed and it just seemed to drag on and on during the keynote?
It was the most boring thing. It was like 45 minutes. And
was it?
For me, the frustrating part was a lot of it we had already essentially seen. I mean, we saw Super Monkey Ball. Great.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, monkey rolling around on a ball. And it looks awesome. I agree. It looks like it's going to be really fun to play and stuff like that. But yeah, just a lot of apps. The one thing I want to comment on the games that I was more excited about than actually seeing the couple big game demos themselves was the pricing.
Yeah.
Both game apps were $9.99 for, you know, and anybody who's bought a game for any other handheld knows that that's a great price point.
Is it? Because how much are they usually for games in that?
$20 and up, usually $19.99 if you've got a Game Boy, and I think they go higher depending on the title.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, for, you know, like Game
Boys
DS, and stuff.
I guess,
like,
I should say I'm dating myself. I haven't had a handheld in a while.
True. Yeah, I was thinking...
PSP games are like 40, 50 bucks.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I guess you can say that, you know, these games are, you know, console games. Isn't that what they said? You know, they're console developers and they're not mobile phone developers, and it's, you know, it performs just like they would expect for a console. It's right on that level. So, yeah, I think that is a really good price point. And I think most of the other applications that were demoed up there were free for the most part.
Much to Apple's chagrin.
Yeah. Now, wasn't that a topic at some point that supposedly Apple is pushing the developers to charge for the applications?
For good reason.
Yeah, well, definitely. But I don't know, it seemed like it was, and I didn't really read through the article. Oh, you know, I just kind of glanced over it, but maybe one of you guys know a little bit more about it, but it seemed like they were sort of bullying the developers into, you know, thinking about charging for their apps.
You know, I didn't read the whole article either, but the reasoning I could see behind Apple deciding that they really want to push developers to charge for their apps isn't so much the whole, you know, we have to get our 30% so we can pay our costs, because, you know, this is all about selling iPhones, not selling the apps. I think it's more about the perceived dilution of the product value.
Yeah.
I think that's why people to charge.
Gotcha. Okay. That's fair enough. Yeah, I don't think we have anything. Oh, no. One thing I wanted to hit on for the SDK, something that I really enjoyed, and because I've been on this, you know, location-based application thing for the last couple of shows. Did you guys see this application that Scott Forstall was demoing? He just kind of threw something together in Interface Builder, and he said, okay, so we're going to hook into the location service and just kind of figure out where my friends are. You know, out of all my contacts lists, who is near me? You know, that kind of stuff is really cool, especially with, you know, what we're going to talk about in a little bit with the new iPhone, and I'm totally just trying to derail myself. But, you know, I think that's so great that it seems like they're really, really pushing for the location-aware applications, and, you know, just something to figure out, you know, it's kind of stalkery, I guess, and all your friends have to have iPhones if you want to figure out where they are, but it's just really cool that it can do so many things, you know.
But, you know, I think that Apple is actually keying in on a market that's really big right now, which is the social networking whole thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And so what they're doing is showing now, or at least telling everyone, hey, look, if you want to be cool, if you want to be hip, if you want to be in on this whole social networking scene, know where everyone is, there's only one platform to go to, and that's the iPhone.
Exactly. And they're kind of taking social networking to another level. And because you go to Facebook and you don't know where everybody is. You know, you can't say, oh, well, my friend's, you know, down the street at this restaurant and I'm looking for something to eat, you know. Or, you know, something like that. It's just, it definitely brings it to the next level. And I think there was another application that was demoed with a strange name. I don't recall what that was, but...
Looped, I think.
Yes, Looped. That's it. And I think we talked about that a little bit, or at least we wrote something up on the site, but location-based social networking stuff. So it's really cool. So I just wanted
Guys come from? I've never heard of that company before. It's just like suddenly, like I wondered some of the picks that Apple made, like where they found these companies. It must be
right
from the developer program, I would assume. They just, you know, kind of handpicked the, what they thought was the cool stuff. But I had never heard of that social network before, which surprised me.
Yeah, I didn't either. I think there are way more than you would expect. I mean, everybody wants the next Facebook, so, you know, everybody throws in. But what about that band application? That was actually a jailbreak application.
Right.
And so I thought that was pretty cool. And I hadn't actually seen anything really interesting go on with band before. But he, you know, the guy just sort of went up there and just kind of played some songs, like really,
really
well.
That guy rocked it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He saved everybody from, that was probably when Dave woke up.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, that part of the keynote was saved by that guy. The crowd response was unbelievable.
We were looking for something. Having 10 apps demoed right out of the gate like that. I mean, it's like going to see a band and, you know, big arena rock show. And the lights come down and, you know, the band hits the stage and then the guy stands there with an acoustic guitar for the first hour and just like plays right. love songs before they kick it into high gear. Like,
right.
Dude, you can't do this. This is not how we run a show. Apple knows better than that.
Don't you think that's kind of what they wanted, though? It was like, I think they wanted you to walk away saying, you know, there's an annoyingly large number of mundane software apps out there for this phone, and just be so annoyed. Like, God, there's way too damn many software apps. My God, let's go complain about how many, and we all are, because it was crazy. And I think that's exactly what they wanted. They just kind of used us as pawns, because we're going to go complain. There's too much software for this iPhone. What are we going to do? We got to get rid of some of them. So that may have been the plan all along. Or Steve just took this one off and Schiller wrote the whole script. I don't know.
It could backfire and we could talk about, you know, the 10 great things about OS X keynote that dragged on for freaking ever. Remember that one?
Was that last year or?
No, that wasn't last year. That was a number of years ago. I think it was in Boston, right? I mean, okay. It was let's kill off the Boston show or the New York show or whatever. And
that's the one where they had nothing at all to announce. And one more thing, we have a pink shoelaces. That's our big, you know, that was nothing that year.
Yeah. Right.
iPod
put
socks.
Your iPod in a sock after you look at these 10 great things about OS X. I mean, that was a snooze fest. So this was, you know, this certainly wasn't that, but I had memories coming back, nightmares of this thing. It's like, oh, we're not doing this again, are we?
Well, I have to ask, do you guys think that they were covering up for, you know, a product that wasn't ready for release that they had planned on? Because I think they did that Macworld 06, and it was just kind of, I don't know, he took like an hour to demo GarageBand or something, and we had all expected some other product. I mean, doesn't it seem like they... Wasn't it rumored that there was going to be a refresh to the MacBooks or something like that?
Right, and then that came later.
Yeah.
I mean, for this keynote.
Yeah. It's a developer conference, and typically Apple does, you know, really focuses it on developers, and it just seemed like that's what they were doing. But, I mean, like, even for the developers, I was thinking, just, God, this has to be so boring for them, because they've all been working with the SDK. They know what it does. They've been using it, so it's like... Who are they demoing all these apps for? And like I said, a lot of them we had seen in the last thing. So there wasn't, it didn't seem to me like there was a whole lot new, or they weren't really showing off because they hadn't announced any of the new features yet. So they really couldn't kind of highlight any of the new stuff. So,
right, yeah.
You know, it was like, what is this all about? Who's this for? And I wasn't really sure, unless it was just investors or, you know, they're hoping to drum up, you know, investment people to go in.
They might have been playing to the media with that part.
Right. That I think that was what they were doing.
It was like the Super Bowl ads. They all paid $10 million each to be up there for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly it. They played to the media with the public keynote in the morning. And then, you know, he announced that in the afternoon was going to be, okay, and then we'll talk to the developers later about Mac OS 10, 10.6 and all of that stuff. And that's just going to happen behind closed doors here effectively.
I want to talk to you about that right after this, because this isn't iPhone and OS 10 Snow Leopard show. But definitely we're going to talk about that afterward. What was I going to say? Jeez, I completely derailed myself.
All right, well, while you try and remember what you're going to say, I'm going to throw one other thing out about the app parade.
Okay.
And I'll have to go back and look at all the apps a lot closer, but it felt to me like they were picking apps that highlighted different things that you can do with the iPhone. Like each one had some special little thing that it did.
Yeah, they did arrange it in a very logical way, and they gave a broad array of different applications for different industries and you know, for different people. So I'll give them credit for that. But I do remember what I was going to ask, and Dave, you were the one who was there, and I just watched the keynote, and this could take us off on a rat hole, but did you notice the phone that they were using to demo? It didn't seem like the one that they, you know, that they usually use. It didn't look like a, you know, here's the standard iPhone with a fat back, you know, to plug it into the projectors. Or did you even notice that?
I did. In fact, I posted something to it about it to our live blog stream. It had a gray back. It almost looked like a case that kind of wrapped around it. Now, yeah. At first I kind of nudged John Martellaro, who's sitting right next to me, and I said, you know, is that the 3G iPhone sitting right there? And it very well could have been, but obviously it did not look like the glossy plastic back 3G iPhone that we now know exists. So I think it was that it probably was the 3G iPhone, but they had built some
crash test dummy iPhone.
Hook it up to the thing. Yeah.
Yeah, they just had padding around it in case they dropped it. Okay.
Yeah, or something so that they could get it, you know, to broadcast to the big screen without having a big dock connector in or what have you, because they wanted to be able to use that thing a little more fluidly.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to the new iPhone 2.0 features. There were most of that stuff was announced during the March event, but you know, mostly just the enterprise stuff. But there are a couple things. There was the scientific calculator, which I think we had all seen with the guys who get a hold of the beta versions and post videos about it. So if you turn the standard calculator landscape mode, then you get, you know, 10 million more buttons to just do whatever you want with it. But there's also iWork and Microsoft Office support now fully in the iPhone. So it's not right, but you can read all those documents, and he did say including Keynote docs, which I think is really cool. Do you think that you're going to be able to present your keynote presentations from your iPhone, or that would be so
gather around, look at my iPhone, let's do a presentation.
You would plug it in with your $50 Apple special cable to your TV.
Yep. Yeah, I think there's no reason we couldn't do that.
I think that would rock. You know, for people who do that, who travel around doing keynote presentations, why not? And I think they would definitely just, you know, spend the 40 or 50 bucks that it costs to get that cable if you can just like have your phone and that's all you need to do your keynote presentation.
There are plenty of Windows mobile phones that do that today.
Yeah.
It's a big ploy so that you buy two iPhones because you'll need another one to act as the remote.
Exactly.
I was going to say at this price you can get two, but I don't want to jump ahead on that. Let me ask you this. So does RTF, is that going to work now, the rich text format? That's always stunned me for a year now. We still can't. You can read plain text, TXT, but not RTF. Like you were sending me the notes the other day, and I couldn't read them on my iPhone when I was coming home.
That is strange to me, too. I don't understand that. But I assume that, you know, if they're going to have Microsoft Office and iWork support, especially with the iWork support, I would assume that rich text is going to be in there, too.
Well, you know, you can always just put that on your to-do list in your iPhone to go and check on that. Oh, wait, there's still no to-do list.
Right. Yeah. Well, third-party apps. Maybe they're just leaving it out, you know, for that.
We don't know that, though. We may not have seen everything that's on the iPhone. You'd think with all the time you had to kill, there would have been other stuff. But, I mean, I don't remember. You know, I think you would have shown the interesting stuff. But I still get a lot of questions about have they – you know, sawed off all the rough edges on the music interface that's been there for a year, for instance, and there was really nothing about that. So I think there's still, when we get this thing in a month, there may still be a lot of questions to be answered and some surprises with some stuff we assumed wasn't going to change.
I think there's a lot of stuff in there that they've just tweaked in this version. And I played with one of the builds of the 2.0 software, and it just seemed so much more finished, even though it was a beta version. And I didn't really expect that. But it definitely feels like, you know, a finished version for all the applications that didn't have a lot of changes, it felt like it was really rounded out, especially with, you know, like the calendar, for example. You know, you have the colored calendars, you have your multiple calendars in there, and you know that never made sense to me, why you were stuck with those. You know, each event is blue, and you know, whenever you create a new event, it, you know, you have to specify a default calendar for that to go into. So, you know, I think a lot of stuff like that is going to be included in the 2.0 software.
You know, one thing that they talked about there, which really kind of got my attention, was in the Mail app. One of my big complaints about it is it's really difficult to do anything in bulk. You have to one at a time. And Jobs Today demoed highlighting multiple messages and then either deleting them in bulk or moving them to, you know, filing them into a different folder, which, you know, if you're using server-side spam filtering, like D-spam or something, and you want to just move your, you know, all the spam messages you see en masse to the learn folder, well, now you can do that, or you can delete the messages or file stuff to your action folder without having to open the message. That's huge, right?
Yeah.
And that's been my big complaint about how pedantic that interface is you have to open the message to file it. It's like, come on, I know I'm not going to deal with this now. Let me put it in my action folder and move on. So I think that's huge.
Yeah, I never understood the current use of the edit button in Mail, because it always seems so much easier to just swipe and then hit delete, because, you know, if you hit the edit button, all you get are a bunch of little minus buttons. You still have to do two things to get the thing to delete. So it's always easier to just, you know, swipe wherever you want to rather than have to hit that little button right on. So I'm glad they actually found a use for that, you know, by
I can tell you where that's just totally invaluable right now.
Okay.
Let's throw out a hypothetical situation. Let's say you have an email account that doesn't have a really good server-side spam filtering system, and so you rely on SpamSieve on your Mac to take care of all of that for you. Well, you don't have something like that on the iPhone. So, you know, maybe one of your accounts you don't have to worry about all the spam, but the other one you really do. So you're going to have like 30 spams in a row that you just want to delete so you can get at the rest of the stuff. Hit that edit button, and then you can just use your thumbs on each side.
True,
and,
yeah.
And go tap, 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 and just go down the list and get rid of messages in a somewhat quick fashion without having to open each one.
But it's still so much better to have, you know, multiple selection. It still seems a little redundant with, you know, with the edit button. So I'm glad they actually came up with a really good use for that.
Yeah, that's going to be a big help for me with my hypothetical email account.
Right.
That plus that swipe gesture, you know, I can get it to work maybe 75% of the time, and the other 25 it's going into the message, which is really,
you know,
I'm so glad. I'm so glad you said that. I thought it's the only gesture on the entire iPhone I have trouble with, and I thought it was just me. I thought it was just spazzing.
It is just else. You. Yeah.
Okay, but that wouldn't surprise me. I swipe across, and I'm like, I'll swipe the spam, and it opens. I'm like, I didn't want to open.
Yeah, and then they have a valid email address, and you're getting more spam. It's great.
Yeah, because I didn't exactly do it horizontal. You know, it was 5-degree angle or something. So.
And I also noticed, and this is something that, you know, we've also seen already, but there's contact search, and which is excellent as long as it works, you know, and I assume it will, but with the versions that I've played with, it, you know, right now it only searches for, I think, the business name and the contact name. So if you, you know, think that they're associated with some note that you have in their address book card file, then, and you just sort of type that in, and that's how you remember them. It, you know, it doesn't pull that up. It doesn't index that for some reason. So I'm assuming that that's just a beta thing, and when it comes out, it's just going to be perfect spotlight search of your address book. So I'm really looking forward to that, because I can never, you know, I have a lot of people in my address book, and I'm sure you guys have too, that are just like, you know, business contacts that you don't actually remember their name always, but you do remember the business, and so you would type that in there. So that's a, you know, a great thing.
I hope they put search into Mail. That would be a beautiful thing to have.
Oh,
I don't know why it's not there.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. And I don't use Mail.app on the desktop, but I certainly do use Gmail, which is obviously all based around search because it's Google.
For me, the other feature that they still need that I was really disappointed, and I think a lot of people were disappointed, wasn't demoed and still hold high hopes that it'll be in there, is some sort of copy paste to move things around from one app to the other.
I don't get why that's not
I use
there.
That constantly on my Trio, you know. I can't imagine how you guys live on an iPhone without copy paste.
Now, what's the gesture on your Trio?
What's the gesture? I highlight it and I go to the menu and choose copy.
So how do you highlight it? You just drag your stylus across it, or?
My stylus or my finger, yeah.
Okay, so so basically what we would do to bring up the little loop, the magnifier, you do that to highlight stuff.
So I correct. Think that's, yeah, that's right. It's that gesture is used differently, obviously, on the Trio.
Yeah, so that's, I think, that where the big problem is, where they couldn't just say, oh, okay, well, we're just going to have hold down, bring up the copy menu or something like that.
Somebody had, there was a YouTube video I saw where somebody had mocked up what it would look like to make that work with the iPhone interface as it stands currently, and it was brilliant.
Yeah,
so hopefully somebody at Apple saw it.
It was fantastic. I'm sure Bob Borchers saw it, and he was a little creeped out by the, you know, iPhone Bob.
Yeah.
Because I think at the end he just, I mean, what they did was they did the whole, what is it, Conan thing? Conan does this, where you cut out the mouth and you have someone else's mouth underneath it and you just sort of talk for him. It was absolutely hilarious. And I think at the end he just kind of said, I love you. And it was just so weird. But it was hilarious. But, you know, that said, definitely, I mean, you would have to, you know, have a pop-up that's a, you know, just in the same way that Apple now, when you first turn on your iPhone, it says to move your icons around, you hold down and do this. And okay, I'll remember that because it makes sense. So they would have to have some sort of, you know, pop-up that says, and to copy paste, you do this. But, you know, hopefully they come up with something that's pretty elegant and easy to remember for most people. So that is something I was disappointed about not seeing. And some other just random things that I noticed in the keynote, there were App Store downloads up to 10 megabytes can be downloaded over Edge, which I thought was shocking. You know, at first, just to even hear that some applications would get up to 10 megabytes, because, you know, for most of the jailbreak apps, the largest things that I've ever encountered were maybe 4. So I don't know how many 10 megabyte applications are going to be out there, but I always assume
some of the games I could imagine, because they have full 3D environments.
Yeah.
That could easily get that large.
Yeah.
10 megabytes is already the cap. Like if you try to download a PDF on Edge, it's, I believe it's 10 megabytes is already the limit. So they may have just left that in place arbitrarily, even though none of the apps may necessarily be that big yet.
Gotcha. Yeah, that could be.
And it's important to note that actually they did not say Edge. They said over the cellular networks. Every time they were talking about it.
Oh, they did.
It was all before the 3G iPhone was announced.
Right. Because they were very crafted in how they controlled the messaging.
I just assumed that over 3G you could just do whatever you wanted to as far as that goes.
No, cellular, 10 megabytes over cellular networks, meaning Edge or 3G.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, you got to use Wi-Fi or iTunes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's an important distinction.
Yeah.
Wow.
And one other thing that I don't think a lot of people caught, but when he was talking about the App Store, he just sort of said, and yes, all of your applications are, you know, conveniently FairPlay DRM'd for you. Did anybody else catch that?
He was speaking to developers at the time. That's the only people who would be glad to hear that, I guess.
True, but I don't know. The one thing that comes up for me is, is it just automatic if it's in the App Store, it's DRM'd, or if it's just, you know, opt-in, or if it's just for pay applications? I mean,
I'm guessing it's automatic everything.
Really?
That's what I would say.
Well, yeah, because look, Apple doesn't want, you know, if let's say you run a thing like, you know, like Ecamm's phone view, right, where you can start pulling stuff off your phone.
Yeah.
Clearly, they're going to find a way to, you know, find the apps on there. So then I could download an app from the store, pull it off my phone and hand it to you. Apple doesn't want that. They want to be able to track this stuff. That's their whole
deal.
They're
making 30%. So. I mean, come on.
You got it. Yeah.
let's get real. They get 30% of the cut. They have a vested interest just as much as a developer in stopping any piracy.
Well, yeah. Right? No, I can definitely see the DRM on applications that are pay applications for sure. But hopefully, I'm sure there are some developers out there who would just say, no, I don't want DRM on my apps. I'm just completely opposed to DRM.
Then you just don't distribute it through the App Store.
Well, you can't.
Oh, wait.
Right.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Well, wait, Apple's done it both ways, though. Two things come to mind. The free single of the week is free music, still has DRM. But then podcasts, which they gave away for free, they're not putting DRM into our podcasts.
True.
So.
You're not downloading podcasts from Apple, though.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
You're downloading them directly from, say, us.
Right. Know? So, I don't bring it up because I'm terribly interested in it. I just, it's something that, red flag thinking, okay, I think a lot of people, at least some people who care about, the whole DRM sucks thing. Mm-hmm. And it does for the most part when it comes to music, but I think it's interesting to note, and hopefully we'll, get some more details on that soon and it'll work out for everybody. So, but DRM,
I would agree and say that, most developers are going to want it to be an opt-in thing. Cause if you have a freeware app and you just want to distribute it to as many people as possible, are you really going to care? But the second thing, I guess, is are you alluding to, so say you pull that app off and someone hands it to you, how are you getting it back into iTunes and back on?
Right. That's just a whole thing. I haven't really thought about that. I just know that there are some people who would say, oh, DRM, that's just terrible. So
what about the iPod games or the $5 iPod games? Are those DRM'd?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so there's precedent then, I guess.
Yeah, those are definitely.
Well, and the thing is, they said as far as distributing an app, if you want it distributed freely, they made it real clear. If you want to create your own app and send it around internally, you can sign up for this program where you get 100 iPhones.
Yeah,
and
the ad hoc thing.
Registered to do. Yeah, so the ad hoc thing has already been addressed. So I don't think that there's going to be an opt in for this DRM. If you want it in the App Store, even if you want to give it away, your app's getting DRM'd every time somebody downloads it.
Well, I thought that more applied to just code signing in general, because although yeah, that makes sense. You can't just sort of hand someone this application that you gave to someone else, but I think it may actually apply because, well, won't you, doesn't the application get signed once you send it to Apple, or is it, I'm not really sure how that code signing thing works, but don't you have to have signed code on your phone, or you have to have like a special registered phone that generates your own special signed code just for you and that iPhone only, and that's where the ad hoc thing would come in.
Right. I think where it comes from is twofold. One, obviously, when it's for sale, Apple wants their 30% of everything.
Right.
And you can't blame them for that, right?
Yeah.
Number two, Apple wants to preserve this user experience, right? When they came out of the gate, they were real careful not to allow apps on the iPhone because they didn't want it to be like my Trio, right? My Trio is pretty good. It only self-reboots once a week now, but that's because I've learned how to manage memory on it and all that. With all the apps I installed on it, it used to reboot, a couple times a day. So they are going out of their way to make sure that that is an impossibility, and the best way to do that is to
just
only
DRM.
Allow people to install apps that they have vetted. So yep. That without question, there'll be a jailbreak that lets you install all the other apps. But what you're getting into when you do that.
Yep.
So I think that's a huge driving force here.
Wow. Listening to you talk about your Trio rebooting once a day, I couldn't even imagine that. Maybe
right, well, like I said, I've gotten it down to once a week now. It's we're living in harmony here.
Oh my goodness. But my iPhone, I think, has had an application crash in the, how long have I had it? Almost a year now. Maybe four times that I can think of. So I hope that stability doesn't go away when we get third party apps.
I think that's the idea. With the whole code signing and the no background processes, because I can definitely say with a jailbroken phone, and I don't think the jailbreak process really does all that much to the stability of the phone. If you just, say jailbreak, and the only thing that jailbreak actually applies to is just making the file system writable, adding all these applications that have, background processes and all of that, that definitely kills the reliability of the phone immediately. So hopefully with their solution, that won't be a problem. And I think that's what they're aiming for. So, go ahead.
One thing that that I didn't see addressed during the keynote, and it was something I was curious about: how are they going to deal with applications at the App Store that, say, a company wants to give away as a promotional thing or with discounts?
I was wondering that too. And the only thing that I could come up with was, you can gift songs right now, right? And so, and you may not have seen this, but you can actually, with the current iTunes app on the phone, if you go into the downloads section, there's actually a redeem button. So you can actually redeem your iTunes cards on the go. So, I had that question too, and I just kind of assumed that, if you're in that situation where a company is giving away an application that isn't otherwise free, you would just be assigned a code, I guess, that you punch in there, and then there's your free app.
What about shareware, where I download it and it works for a little bit, and then I decide, yeah, I want to buy it now, I'll pay for it.
Yeah, there's that question too. I don't think they've ever really addressed shareware.
Doesn't sound like something Apple would want to promote. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's clunky. It's a two-step process. And the Apple lets the record labels go in and sort of do sales. They don't make a big deal, but you see an album that's $5.99 for the month, and then it goes back to $9.99. And so if these companies are going to be given that same power that the labels are, they just have to negotiate their sales through Apple and say, hey, Apple, we want to lower the price this week. Can you give us a front page thing? So that may go on.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sure it will, yeah.
Let's move on to MobileMe. And I think, Dave, do you want to talk about MobileMe? Because you're the, as far as I know, you're the big guy all about the .dot Mac.
Yeah, okay. So I sync three Macs right now with .dot Mac, and it's fantastic. In fact, I use the iDisk too. So I have my home directory on my iDisk, and then I have my address book and calendar in address book and iCal. And they're all synced with .dot Mac. So as I move from either my machine in the office to the studio or to the house, as I bounce around, all my data is in sync. And then, of course, I use IMAP for my email, so that's all in sync too. And it's a wonderful thing. And I've always wondered why can't you just register an iPhone as yet another .dot Mac sync device? And through brilliant marketing, Apple has effectively just enabled that functionality and totally rebranded it. And oh yeah, they wrote a Windows client for it to work with Outlook too. And really, that's the core of what MobileMe is now the iPhone can be another device that syncs with your .dot Mac store, and so can a Windows machine. There's more than that, right? They created this web interface for it so that you can better manipulate. Right now, there's no way to manipulate the calendar data that's stored in the cloud.
Right.
So they're fixing that, and they've got what looks to be a fantastic iCal clone in Safari, where you can drag things around, and I'm sure it's using all sorts of Ajax and other nifty technologies to accomplish that. But it looked really cool. So now we can manipulate the data that's in the cloud, including the iDisk that's in the cloud. And I think that's great. I mean, it's a total plug and play for me, because I've already got all my data that way, except my email. I don't use .dot Mac for my email, and I don't intend to use MobileMe for my email for a lot of reasons. But I imagine that's going to be fine, and I can just keep doing what I do.
So. And the one other big thing about the whole MobileMe, it's basically, like you said, just kind of like .dot Mac, but it extends to the iPhone, iPod Touch, and PCs now. But also, the really huge thing was push calendars, contacts, and email for the rest of us. So for everyone who doesn't have an Exchange server, for people who don't work for an enterprise who does that, well, this is your solution for that, to get up to the second, they say, updates. So whenever you change a calendar appointment on your laptop, your iPhone immediately gets that change regardless of where it is. And
that works great when you've got one person connected to the server, like Phil Schiller was today.
Right.
There weren't millions of people or even thousands of people connected to the server. So I will reserve judgment on that whole immediate thing that they talked about until I actually see it. Because my experience with .dot Mac has not It's the best thing I've got going, and it really truly is a wonderful thing, despite the fact that once every 6 weeks I have to jigger with one of my machines to free some problem and resync and go through that whole mess. It's totally worth it to have that perpetual sync going.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not convinced it's going to be like an Exchange server where it truly changes immediately once they actually put load on these things.
Well, doesn't
maybe I'm wrong, but they haven't proven otherwise yet in, you know, what, 5 years. So,
well, they do have
forgive me,
the Yahoo push email that they have, and that's definitely, I don't think that's through Yahoo. I think that's something that Apple does.
No, that's Yahoo.
Are you sure that that's Apple's Yahoo. Or Yahoo is controlling all of that? As far as the push end of it, because I'm okay. Well, then.
But I mean, Dave, you're forgetting how well Back to My Mac works. I mean, they added that new feature beautifully.
Yeah,
I forgot that I had that feature.
By the time my kids graduate from college and go get married, we might be able to see that thing work. So,
see, if Mobile Me sucks, they can just wait a year and change the name again. Change it back to iTools. If Twitter should do this, people forget exactly what they were complaining about. Like AT&T,
right.
I mean Singular, I mean M Life, I mean AT&T before that. You do this,
it's a tool, all right.
Yeah, huh. I'm changing the name of iPhone next week.
It did start out as iTools. Good history, Bill.
It's a tool, right.
Two things I noted that I thought was very interesting about the Mobile Me, and I'm probably going to forget the second one, but I'll start with the first one, and hopefully the second item I was thinking about comes back to me. But Dave, you mentioned the web interface, which I saw the screenshots and stuff, and it looks great. And what's funny about the Mobile Me web interface is, a lot of people for a long time have asked, why does Apple keep all of your information management tools separate? So you have Mail and Calendar and Address Book. You know, they're all separate apps. And the web version of Mobile Me brings it all together. I mean, it's kind of like that Outlook clone that everybody wants, but it's web-based. You know, it runs through Safari.
It's Outlook Web Access for... Exactly. Yeah, no, it totally is. It's I think
but
it's great.
All integrated. So you have it integrated in the cloud, but it's sort of not integrated on your Mac, which is very interesting. I've never had a problem with that. I like having the separate apps personally.
I agree with you. I like an icon in my dock for different functions.
Absolutely, and that's why I have I have Gmail, right, you know, that I can get with on my Safari. But certainly, I don't ever use that. I use an application called Mailplane, and that's just a site-specific browser, you know.
Right.
But I really like the ability to just, you know, not worry about all my mail progress going away when Safari decides to take a dive, you know.
Right, right. And now I remembered the other thing, and it's what I've talked about prior to the keynote, and I still hold hope for after seeing some of the iDisk stuff, because I think iDisk is really underutilized. I personally use it as well for little things here and there, but probably not to its fullest extent. I don't know if the web interface is going to change my mind. But with regards to the iPhone, I still am hoping that there's going to be some things in the SDKs and some functionality added to allow developers to use that in-cloud iDisk space with their third-party apps to kind of store off stuff. And I still hope there's some future plan, you know, in looking at a technology like Quick Look, which, you know, a developer can add a plugin for their file format. So they mentioned adding iWork support and support for other file formats on the iPhone. I'm hoping at some point, you know, you'll be able to just write an iPhone plugin for your third party app to make your document readable on the iPhone, and that maybe you'll be able to store these things up on your iDisk in the cloud and pull them down when you need them and view them and all that sort of thing. So I can see some of those pieces in this new Mobile Me thing making that kind of technology possible. It wasn't mentioned specifically in this keynote, but maybe in the iPhone 2.2 or 2.5 version or something like that, we'll see something like that.
Yeah. Okay, if we're done with the Mobile Me discussion, let's talk about that other thing that was announced. Do you guys know what that other thing was? There was something.
I thought
we
were done.
Can we wrap this up?
There was more.
Was there?
I turned it off at that point.
You turned it off after the after the Mobile Me. It was just.
I went to get a bottle of water. I got lost.
Okay,
this is just like when I left for the end of Iron Man.
Right. So obviously, we're talking about the iPhone 3G, and it's almost everything that we had hoped for. It has 3G, of course, as its name denotes, but it also has GPS. It has the same capacities as the current iPhone does, the 8 and the 16 gigabyte. It has a all-plastic back, and kudos to you guys at TMO, because you guys were spot on with that thing. You guys posted the first picture of that actual leaked phone.
I think we did back in March.
Yeah, we did.
As it turns out, we were right. And the one
I said was an obvious fake.
Probably
the one everybody said was an obvious fake.
Bill, you have to use the correct iPhone Alley terminology, and I think Jeff could.
Yes, that would be fakety fake, 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 fake.
Yeah. Right.
And if you say that wrong, you'd have to use the explicit tag.
Right.
That happens to me all the time.
Right.
We'll get to that when we talk about the battery, but again, I don't want to jump ahead.
So it's got, you know, like you said, way improved battery life, a lot better than a lot of the other phones, as they love to compare. And the really big thing is it's really, 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 I mean, really affordable. It's $200 for the 8 gigabyte iPhone, and that just blew me away. And Adam, you're the one who kept saying, "Oh man, there's just going to be that $200 iPhone." And so
I thought it was going to be the first gen model.
I was trying to give it to you, and then you.
No, I'll take full credit. They blew me away with that one. I was like, "Are you kidding me?"
Right.
Yeah.
So it's extremely great. The only thing we don't see is obviously the copy and paste and larger capacities. That, at least that's what I was looking for, copy and paste and larger capacities.
A couple things on that $199 price though that I thought were significant. One,
okay.
That it's going to be $199 across the board internationally, which I assumes means that there's going to be that no longer, you know, Apple price premium or international price premium.
Right.
But the other thing is, you know, sort of the hidden details behind that price that are kind of coming out now, within terms of how the AT&T subsidy works and some of the rev share stuff changing. And you know, you have to ask, where is Apple making up some of the price difference? And we talked about on the last show some of the components, you know, that likely went down in cost, including like flash memory. But, you know, AT&T is going to be making $10 more per customer on that data plan. And I think that's factoring into that a little bit, too. So
that's another one of those things.
And they're not doing the rev share with Apple. So, I mean, the money's coming back somewhere. You know, AT&T and Apple aren't losing this money outright. And I think Apple's hoping that at that price point, they're just going to sell so many more phones, they'll make it up, you know, with the App Store and other things like that.
I mean,
they chopped $100 off the price and added $240 to the price of your contract.
Right.
Right.
So,
when I saw it, I just thought, geez, I want to go down and buy 7 and just, you know, hand them out at the orphanage to all the children just because they're so cheap. But
which orphanage will that be?
One with 6 children so I can keep the 7th iPhone.
Great. Now I have to knock off some kids so I can get an iPhone. Great.
But the other things I failed to mention is it also has metal buttons, which I think is kind of funny. They sort of switched it around. The back is no longer metal; it's plastic, and the plastic buttons are no longer plastic; they're metal.
I have a thought on that.
Sure.
I think they have a bigger antenna for the 3G, and you can't very well wrap an antenna in metal and expect it to work.
Oh, 3G and the GPS stuff, because that the GPS, it has something that we did not expect to have. It has tracking. Jeff, what do you think of that? Because you're the one who gave us our lesson on GPS.
You know, as soon as they started talking about GPS, first, I was totally shocked because I've been saying all along, no GPS built in.
Right.
But then when they started showing the live tracking and stuff, I want to see one of these things cracked open because I want to see just exactly how they're doing this. Because, you know, I've said it before, if you want to have accurate GPS data and in a timely fashion, you need to be able to hit at least 3 satellites at the same time. So does Apple actually have at least a 3-channel GPS built into this thing? And if they do, I mean, holy crap, that's crazy, especially considering the size of the device.
Right. And that, you know, I'm thinking that's part of the reason why they went with a full plastic back, so they could, you know, have room, reception for all of the new antennas that they have in there. But I just, you know, talking about the tracking thing, it's just so darn cool. It's just a little dot that sort of moves, but the dot actually sends out little, you know, ripples that just sort of looks like something. It's just very Apple Touch. You know, it's very futuristic and very cool the way that they did that. So I would definitely like to see this thing working, you know, in practice to see if it is, you know, that great. You know, that thing alone, you know, for all these new location-based social networking applications, they would definitely take advantage of that. But then again, I would have to have all of my friends on iPhones, but it's only $200, so I think that could happen.
Yep.
And the other thing, there's the flush headphone jack, and I think that is where the audience applauded most throughout the entire keynote. Am I right, Dave?
That yeah. I mean, it, you know, and I was thinking about it as we're all cheering wildly, you know, that they about this stupid headphone jack. And the reason we all cheered is because it's very difficult to get everyone to say in concert, it's about freaking time.
Yeah.
So I think that's why we just cheered, because it sent that message simultaneously. So
definitely. So that's a good thing. You know, I think it's kind of funny that all of these third-party manufacturers had to go out of their way to make all these, you know, recessed headphone jacks. And honestly, I think that they're going to keep going with it. You know, because there's still the first generation iPhone out there. And, you know, I was just talking about my my Edimotic earbuds that I just got that were made for the iPhone. I don't think they're just going to say, well, you know, we don't have to mess with that anymore. For the most part, I think stuff having to do with the headset jack is going to, you know, remain the same as far as the four connections in the headphone jack. It's just going to be more of a, like, if you have these random headphones that you need, you know, that you want to use with your iPhone, then you don't even have to worry about an adapter. And it is a great thing. And as far as I could tell from the pictures, it looks like it's nice and flush, and it, you know, looks really good. I'll have to see it, you know, for myself, but I think they did a good job with that. And they also... go ahead.
I was just going to say, and this may be getting into conspiracy theory, I may be giving them too much credit, but I have always thought Apple did that with the first gen on purpose. Because clearly the earbuds they gave you with the iPod had the button with the clicker and the mic, and I think they didn't want anyone to just be able to grab any old earbuds and use it with an iPhone. They wanted to force the companies to go make iPhone-specific headphones that had that clicker button on there. And the way to get the companies to make it the fastest was to get customers to demand it, and the way to get them to demand it was to make sure nothing worked but the cheap ones that come with the iPhone. And I've always thought Apple did that on purpose, and they sort of fostered those line of products, and now that they got that going and these things are coming out of the woodwork, all these iPhone specific stuff, now they can ease up. It reminds me a lot of when the first iMac came out and it didn't have anything but USB, and it was crazy for us who bought the original iMac. We had no printers or anything, but boy, did those third party USB peripherals start coming out of the woodwork really fast, because we were desperate for them and companies knew we would just be throwing cash. And I will always believe, until someone can prove me otherwise, I always believe that Apple, at least maybe if not intentionally, did that when it came out that way. Okay, we'll leave it that way. It'll work out well for us. And it may just me being crazy, though.
I like that theory. At least it, you know, it may make sense. It's certainly, it sounds like it certainly could hold water.
There's a lot of historical precedence for that. I mean, you could point to what you could point almost to something like FireWire or any other thing. I mean, how many video cameras had a FireWire connection before Apple threw it on every computer and started throwing software out there for everybody to use? I mean, some, but it just really set the standard, and they've done it several times that I can think of.
Okay, so I can see that for, you know, USB and FireWire, but for something like, you know, iPod or iPhone earbuds, you know, I can understand maybe if you're going from the angle of they want to have, you know, that whole experience of, you know, no matter what, you're on your iPhone that is also an iPod that is also a you know, a browser. But in order for it to be a phone and a music player, you have to have that mic in your earbuds while you're listening to it. Do you think that's where they were sort of going with that?
No. But I mean, I can see where you could begin to believe that, or you could tell a story for that, like Bill has, and it doesn't end up being that seeming that far fetched.
Yeah. So what was it? There was something else. Okay, so it's a little thinner too, and it's got a lot better battery life.
Is it actually that was something I couldn't remember as I was watching it. I mean, is it a better battery life than the current phone?
Steve went out of his way to try to paint it as being better battery, and I got all excited because everybody knows I've been complaining for 11 months about the horrible battery life for screen turned on usage. And then he ran down the numbers, and I'm like, okay, talk time's the same, music playback is the same, and on-screen usage is either the same or an hour worse. I tried to look it up. I couldn't find the original specs as Apple has pulled them. I just about fell out of my chair in anger. I really was tempted to just... I mean, this is a great day for the iPhone. It's not a great day for me as an iPhone user because with these apps, I'm going to have the screen turned on even more, which means that the iPhone is even more of a compromised product. And I'm really just – I'm almost praying that this third-party external battery pack I got will work with the new iPhone. Otherwise, I got to wait 3 months for them to come out with that. I really hope I miss something on the battery numbers. But am I going crazy? Yeah. Am I?
Yeah. Well, I thought that the battery life was better for the edge capabilities, and they were just about the same for when you're using 3G. Or maybe I was drinking the Kool-Aid at that time.
What I'm wondering is there weren't specifics to on those times, because we know from some of the SDK leaked images that, and I'm assuming these features are there, that you'll be able to turn the 3G off and you'll be able to turn the GPS off and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So what are the details behind those numbers when he's talking about that much music playback? Is it with everything, with those things turned off, or are they on? We don't have those details yet. So, I was kind of thinking the same thing as you, Billy. It seemed to be about the same, which is great. And he made a point, I think, of specifying this is versus other 3G smartphones. So I think compared to other 3G smartphones, it's a huge quantum leap. So probably anybody who has a 3G phone who's been waiting for this one is very excited. But I agree, being a current iPhone owner, I went, well, that's great. It's pretty much the same. At least it didn't get worse.
Right. And I think he did make a point that some of the 3G functions as far as, surfing the web and whatnot, yeah, I think you get like one or two more hours than on the Nokia N95 and those kind of things. But, we just have to wait and see until we can see that in practice. But I think Apple's been pretty conservative with their estimates on battery life lately.
The one thing that I want to comment on too is I mentioned a couple times on this podcast, I think, that I really wanted to see the side-by-side comparisons, and Steve did do some of those. I haven't watched the video yet, but I saw some of the images, and I think I saw that one of the pages loaded in 32 seconds on 3G, and it was 45 or 50.
It was like 58 seconds on the 3 or
so, 2.5 to 3 times faster. And luckily they did the price drop, because I still would have been in the same boat. Had the prices stayed the same, I don't think I would have been that interested in upgrading for that much more browsing speed. And somebody in my chat even commented to me, see, this is why we wanted 3G. And I said, you know what? For me, it's not that much of a difference in time in web browsing if the price has stayed the same. Now, take that back, with the price drop, it's like, well, it's a no-brainer. I mean, it's a cheaper phone and it's faster.
Yeah. That price drop is phenomenal.
Yeah.
One other thing that I wanted to mention, what do you guys think of the white iPhone? Because at first I thought it was a really excellent idea when he said, oh, and there's white. Because whenever I thought of what an iPhone would be when I was dreaming about the iPhone before there was no iPhone, I always envisioned it being white, like an iPod. And so I was kind of, I thought it was strange that it wasn't white. It was kind of black and it was kind of silver.
Which surface is going to show scratches more, I guess would be my question. And
I'm guessing the white will show scratches more. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
No. Okay. So, without scratches, do we think that the white is prettier than the black? Or because I'm not really sure. I'm kind of on the fence about that, because I really like white, but I don't know if it kind of goes with the silver apple and the silver chrome. And isn't the front still black?
Yeah, but it's been 2 years since, almost 2 years since you've been able to buy a white iPod, say. So it's been something that they've kind of, like when the black was missing from the laptops for years and years, and then they brought it back on the premium MacBook, all of a sudden we all had to have one. Finally, a black laptop again. Now, the iPod has been gone from the iPod iPhone line for so long, I immediately wanted the white just because I haven't been allowed to buy a new white i device right. in a couple of years.
Well, here's the marketing thing. If you have a old iMac, you get the white. If you have a new Intel iMac, you get the black, and then they're matching, right?
Yeah. Well, I heard from somebody just randomly on one of the comments on a piece we posted that that it would be terrible if that Surface was used on the iPhone because look at the Mighty Mouse, it just gets so scratched up, and I guess the guy carries the thing around in his pocket, which is a little strange, but sure. And I guess I can see that it gets a little scratched up, and not so much that you would notice, say, on the metal. If you get a scratch on the metal, you certainly notice it, but you can only notice scratches under certain angles of light on this plastic. So, I don't know how I feel about the white. I guess it's just a personal choice, and I'll probably end up getting the white unless I look at both of them side by side, and I just think it looks totally ugly, just because I like to stay with the white iPods. It was really disappointing to see, a silver and a black. So that's just my thing. Did you guys see that ad?
It's awesome. That was funny.
Let me play it, because I posted a story just saying that this is probably the coolest ad that I've seen from Apple. And I say cool, not, the best, because I think we all agree that the 1984 one is, classically the best. But let me just play this. That's two secret agent looking guys walking down a hallway and accessing doors and all that.
It's finally here.
They're carrying a metal box.
The first phone to beat the iPhone. It surfs the web and downloads data twice as fast for half the price.
They enter two keys and turn them at the same time, and the thing just opens.
The new iPhone 3G.
I just love that ad. I think it's so cool.
It is cool. Have you seen it yet, Adam?
Yeah. I thought at first it was going to be a promo for, they were going to throw a Get Smart promo in there with the movie coming out. But it's very cool.
That's what I was thinking. I thought it was, they were kind of going down a Get Smart hallway. And
yeah, they got that long hallway. It looks very, very much like that, but much hipper and cooler.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it was a great ad. It was definitely a change in what Apple usually goes for in the ads. They go for very, very simple and, not a lot of rock guitars unless it's an iPod ad. So,
they are really just across the board in their ads these days, I think, more going straight to the point and straight for the jugular in a lot of cases. And I think it's something that we've been wanting for a long time. It's like, look, Apple, you have all these strengths. You really just need to be direct with people and be like, hey, this is why we're cool and this is why we're better, and you just need to buy our stuff. I mean, it's just that straightforward. And this is kind of the first ad that's really, it's proving, look, we are on the top and we're still on the top, and this is the best phone out there, and the only people who can beat us is us.
Yeah.
Well, and I actually wrote that almost that verbatim down in my notes while watching the keynote. It's clear that Apple is not waiting for, BlackBerry and Palm and everybody else out there to come out with their real true iPhone competitors. They're competing with themselves now, and they'll continue to do that, hopefully.
They know they have to.
Right, they know they have to until somebody comes out and sets the bar and says, okay, we've got something that actually competes here, in some way, shape, or form, and then steps up. I mean, BlackBerry's got the and I can't think of the name of it because I haven't really slept in 2 days, but they've got that new thing with the, Wi-Fi and all that coming out, and maybe that'll be a competitor, maybe it won't, but Apple's not. It's clear that they're not waiting for that.
Yeah, they definitely understand that, the cell phone market is just so different from any of the other markets that they were in. Even as far as MP3 players, they can kind of stagnate a little more with the iPod than they can with the iPhone, but there are just so many phones, and I think that was illustrated with one of the graphs that Steve Jobs presented initially at the unveiling of the original iPhone. It's just that, it's just such a massive market because everybody has a phone. So.
Yep.
they definitely understand that they have to keep competing with themselves, and so that's a really good way to put it.
Now, didn't Palm's CEO say that Apple couldn't expect to just walk into the cell phone market when they announced the original iPhone?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of thinking he was wrong.
Yeah, they sort of walked in and just sort of said, we have the best, ha ha. So
I think he and Michael Dell are off hanging out somewhere.
Yeah.
Texting each other on their iPhones.
Yeah.
So I was going to say the other thing is just the sheer number of markets Apple is launching into, and Michael, I am going to take credit for nailing that prediction that
yeah.
we have that one slide with the global map.
I didn't think it was going to happen. The way I envisioned it was similar, but I figured we were going to see all of the little glossy circles with each of the flags on them. That's what I figured right. I would see, them all rolling out and there it is. But man, you nailed that perfectly. It was, let's sit here for 2.5 minutes while It's a Small World After All plays and like these countries light up. It was pretty funny.
See, when we listened to the audio feed, had no idea what was going on.
No, you didn't.
Are they on the ride? Are they singing along? What are they doing?
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on. I was actually chatting with Dave as we were listening to it, and I was just like, "What are they doing, singing A Small World After All?" And he was just laughing because he's there seeing what's going on. It's not something that Steve normally does.
It did sound weird.
Yeah, but it was effective. I mean, 2.5 minutes to show all of these different countries. What was it, 70? Some countries.
70.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
You know, what's interesting is how many of them are launching on the same day, 22 or something like that. They must have
22.
So much inventory built up if they're going to be that confident, because they could stagger this if they wanted to, even 1 week at a time or a couple of days. But they must have so many warehouses full of these things.
Oh.
So many more than probably last time that I really wonder if we're going to have the shortages again like we did last time for the first few weeks.
Well, you know what's going to be really horrible? Because the other thing that they didn't mention and now has been confirmed, and I actually from the same AT&T spokesman, is that no remote activation.
Yeah, I heard that.
iPhone. You have to do it in-store at an Apple store or an AT&T store, which also means no online sales. Has anybody noticed when you click the Buy Me button, there is no pre-order? And that's because you have to physically go in a store. And they said each activation, 10 to 12 minutes.
No, actually, wait a minute, because I read something on Boy Genius Report that said activation will happen in the store, but if it doesn't, then you can plug into iTunes at home and activate there.
Interesting.
Well, if it doesn't happen in the store, what, after waiting for 10 minutes?
Why wouldn't it happen in the store to begin with?
But you remember the original launch? I mean, how long the lines were? Now, can you imagine every person walking in, 10 to 12 minutes, sitting there to wait for the thing to activate? I mean, what is that going to be like? And no wonder they're not letting AT&T employees take vacations.
But isn't that a great way to
delay?
Cut down
on the outside the window too? Wasn't it from like June, mid-June to July 15th?
Yeah,
those extra employees aren't going to be around very long.
So the guys who are out on the at the back end of the at the campout line, they're going to be waiting until the end of July.
I didn't mention it, but I'm actually sitting in front of the Grove right now in a tent at the Apple Store.
Are you first in line, Bill?
Actually, I'm 24th. It's Macy Gray is in front of me. Tom Selleck is. I don't know what's. I really don't. I had a better joke than that, but I forgot it. Sorry.
So it should only take you about a week to get yours with activation time.
So I'll tell you something. The activation thing, it sure is a pretty good way to make sure that people are actually doing the AT&T contract, right? I mean, that's.
But, what if you want to buy one and give it away as a present? Are they still going to allow that?
I bet you can do that at $3.99 or something crazy like that, and you get a rebate. I mean, there's this vague asterisk next to the $1.99 on the Apple website, and there's a lot of wording down there. On the front page of the asterisk, there is no asterisk. It doesn't tell you what it means.
No,
I really think there's something strange and maybe ominous coming on that front.
It says based on the 3G and Edge testing. Oh, wait. No, they have two asterisks.
On the price. Somewhere on the
$1.99
has an asterisk,
and there is
too.
No asterisk that applies to the price. And unless they're talking about the requires new 2-year AT&T rate plan.
Now, I still have an email in that I haven't gotten a response on. But I mean, one of the rumors that I read too, that I asked sent an email about was one of the sites was reporting that there'd be some sort of penalty if the thing isn't activated, or they're considering some sort of penalty
instead of the activation in the store.
30 days. Right. So you go into the store, it doesn't get activated, or you want to give it away. You have there's a time period. And again, the rumor is that they're just considering doing this, that if it's not activated within that time period, then some sort of additional charge gets set, which I think would be ridiculous.
There has to be. There's no way Apple's letting these iPhones go out for $100 less than the iPod Touch, the same price as the iPod Nano, and not getting that contract on. They got to be assuming they're going to get the contracts on at least 90% of them, or they'd never do this. They'd lose a ton of money if it was like the current ratio.
Well, this is all AT&T, because Apple's not the other thing that I believe it was confirmed is that there is no rev share anymore.
Really?
Yeah, it's all subsidized by AT&T, and there's not a rev share on this. And when I heard that, I was like first shocked, but then I thought, well, maybe this was Apple's way of getting out of that contract. Maybe they said, fine, AT&T, you have the whole thing, but we're not going to be exclusive anymore, and that maybe they're in talks and just haven't figured things out yet with, say, T-Mobile.
So wait, what?
I don't know, but I did hear that, and I thought I read somewhere that they said that was confirmed.
But what happens
What
happens when you go and restore your iPhone in iTunes? Do you have to go back to the AT&T store?
No, I think like Dave was saying, I think like once they've entered it into the system, whether it activates or not, hits their server and actually activates, it's probably just like it was with the original launch. You're in the system. They know that you signed up for a contract, and you're good to go. And you're fine at that point. I mean, they're going to have your ID. It's going to do the whole phone home thing. But just the fact that you have to be in store, you have to be sitting there, you have to wait for the thing to activate. If it doesn't, then you can go home and use it, and it'll activate later, whatever. But it's just a much less convenient way to buy it than the original experience. And granted, the original experience was rough for some people. But, I did it a couple weeks later. I had a very positive experience, and I would love to have that again. It really bums me out that I'm going to have to walk into a store that's going to be really crowded at that price point for weeks, and then just have to deal with that. It's just not the user experience.
It just feels very un-Apple.
I agree. Yeah. It seems terrible for them to do that. I mean, like, one of the really huge things that they loved promoting was that it's not even like a regular cell phone that you have to go into the store and activate. You just buy it and you bring it home, and in the convenience of your home, you activated.
So I think a lot is lost with that experience.
I completely agree.
And I think this is all AT&T.
Completely confirmed.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if... Go ahead.
No, just to clarify, it's been confirmed by lots of rumors and speculation, but I don't think AT&T has issued a press release on this, right?
So you definitely think that it's going to happen. It's a sure thing. It's just not, public officially.
That's what it seems like, yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to still...
One of the reports cited this AT&T PR person who I did email, and I got one email back from him just confirming how the price change happened, and that it does require a new 2-year contract to get the $199 price. And if you're an existing iPhone owner, you're going to have to re-up your 2-year contract with AT&T to get the $199 price. So if you want to upgrade, so that I confirmed with a spokesman, and I forget which site, it might've been TUAW, or Engadget.
I think it was Gizmodo or something.
Source. Gizmodo cited the same guy as confirming that. So I don't know why they would say that if they didn't actually have an email from the guy saying,
no, I'm sure they had the, I'm just hoping that the AT&T guy was confused. It just seems so bad to me. But one other thing that I did want to mention is there is it's $10 more for the 3G data plan, but it'd be a total of $30 on top of the standard voice. But I have heard that current iPhone owners will be grandfathered in to the 3G plan if you have a current contract with AT&T, which you supposedly do if you're in the United States, and so it'll stay at that $20 price point, and you'll get the unlimited 3G access. That's what I heard. Did anybody else hear that, or
is that going to be for the life of my new 2-year contract?
I would assume so. That's what I mean. when you sign up for your new 2-year contract, you're just grandfathered in with that $20 price point.
Great.
That would be great. I'm kind of shocked that they
I haven't heard that one yet.
I hadn't heard that either. Yeah.
It was from MacNN, I believe we got that from. So MacNN. Yep.
It sounds like there's a lot for them to still sort out, and maybe they already have. Yeah. But between this and the other thing we mentioned with the in-store 12-minute activation, I wouldn't be entirely surprised if the reason for the 5-week delay is to figure out all this crap before they go live. Because, I mean, a relatively small number of people had a problem last time, and it was a big PR nightmare. If it's as bad as the picture we just painted, it could be a horrible backlash. So, you know, they may be just kind of stalling on AT&T and saying, no, we're not doing it your stupid way. We'll wait a month, you know. We'll wait to put this thing out until you guys realize that's a dumb idea.
I really hope that happens.
Steve Jobs standoff things.
Did anybody also find it interesting that the whole delay was just kind of glossed over? Like, it wasn't even really
the fact that we're not getting our software until,
like, oh, it's in July now.
Yeah.
But like, they didn't even flat out say that. They just kind of like the original June date never even existed.
Exactly.
Like the way he glossed over the battery life. I think he was just kind of. Steve probably, I think he was throwing things at people all morning, like, this is what we got to do. You know, we couldn't get it perfect. We only got it 98% of the way, and he smashed some things and then walked out there and tried to, you know, put a prettier picture on it than it was.
Well, I think it's the Apple way to just sort of, you know, act like the other announcement didn't happen and, you know, something like that. When it's that minor, at least, you know, obviously.
Yeah,
not
it,
with
it's
like,
not too bad, but it's just, yeah. It was just seemed, it was interesting the way... The way it went down, and they really made sure, again, in crafting, you could tell how much the communication was crafted, even from the third-party developers. You noticed how careful they were with their wordings and stuff like that. That date, the July 11th date, didn't hit till very end of the keynote.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to fuel a whole lot of speculation, but did the original iPhone... It didn't come with a SIM ejector tool, did it?
Yeah, I saw that too. I saw too. I thought that was very interesting.
It did not come with it. You only got one of them SIM ejector tools if you had to send your iPhone off to be repaired.
Okay.
Well, you know what? Everybody does have one, though. I mean,
Well, it's not an official Apple SIM ejector tool. It is normally used for, I think, holding papers together.
Holding papers together.
Well, that's a novel idea.
That's been a classic Mac tool since the very beginning.
That's right. Yeah, this is
the little iMac reboot hole.
And iTunes 7.7, they say, is required for the phone, which, of course,
doesn't
we
exist
don't have yet.
Yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and but yeah, on the mobile me too, I saw. I think it was also TUAW. Someone went over the terms and conditions and noted that MobileMe is going to require 10.5.4.
Oh, interesting. Didn't see that.
But still, if you're on Tiger, 10.4.11, which was really interesting. But
yeah, huh? Well, then they find some strings or hooks or something like that for MobileMe in parts of Leopard in this last update. So yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, they did. They had like wildcard characters
to hold
the name of the whatever the product was going to be. Now we know it's MobileMe.
Right. Hey, does me does me
sorry, I was
come up?
Jump back to Dave's SIM ejector tool. So I mean, Dave, are you thinking? Because the first thing I thought was, well, does that mean you were going to be able to swap out SIMs? Or I mean, maybe it's more for the international because they have multiple carriers. So what happens when you switch your carrier? I guess you got to be able to pop that thing out. More easily,
or if you're upgrading your iPhone, you know, from
moving from one phone to the other, you think you're going to pop the SIM and just move on, huh?
I think so.
But they do that in the store if you got to register it there anyway.
True.
Yeah, and they have a paperclip ejector
tools.
Right at the desk.
Yeah,
they keep them right there to hold some papers together.
Right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to jump away from what you were going to say, Michael. I think it was you.
No, I think I said all I need to say about the SIM ejector tool. So, unless you guys have anything else to bring up, I think that wraps it up for us. Yeah?
Wrap it up.
Okay.
Quick, we'll
take it to go.
Okay, so once again, we have Bill Palmer joining us from iProng Magazine at iProng.com and on Twitter at twitter.com/BillPalmer. And so thanks again for joining us, Bill.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Yep. And you can find Jeff Gamet on the Mac Observer at macobserver.com and Twitter at twitter.com/jgamet, J-G-A-M-E-T. GAMET.
Wow, you have my Twitter account memorized.
I do. It's kind of freaky, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. but I'm okay with it. It's okay.
Well, we love having you on.
Hey, it's always a blast to be on, so thanks for having me.
Yeah. And Mr. Adam Christensen, again, joins us from the MacCast, and you can get the MacCast on iTunes and also on MacCast.com. And your Twitter is twitter.com/MacCast, right?
Got it.
With no
I was
funky
a little worried. I was
accents.
A little worried for you right there for a second, but yeah, that's it.
Yep. And, of course, the amazing Dave Hamilton. from the Mac Observer and
Mr. Mac Observer
and Backbeat Media, and it was excellent having you on. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thanks for having me. Do you want me to tell you where my Twitter account is, or don't I get to do that since it's only my first time here?
Well, you're allowed to tell it, but I you don't give it out on the Mac Geek Gab anymore.
Oh, that's only because I don't think to. It's twitter.com/Dave Hamilton.
Yeah, well, I always thought it was because, well, as soon as I asked for that embarrassing picture of you to put up during your Twitter announcement in the podcast, you immediately stopped announcing your Twitter.
that was entirely unintentional, I swear.
Oh, I've been itching to use that picture. One of these days it will be used. Did you mention
Excellent.
It tonight on the show?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No.
Well, it's twitter.com/Dave Hamilton.
That's right.
And our bandwidth is provided by CashFly at cashfly.com. And for the latest iPhone news, tips, and reviews, that's every day. You can find that at iPhoneAlley.com, and our show notes are at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. And if you have any questions or comments or feedback for the show, you can email us at podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. And please write us an iTunes review. It's go to iTunes and search for iPhone Alley. You'll find us and write us a review. We love those. And make sure you subscribe in iTunes. And also, I wanted to mention that right now we're using our show theme is just kind of something we yanked out of GarageBand per the suggestion of Bill, which is a really good suggestion because we're not in trouble with the RIAA right now. For using something that's copyrighted.
Lucky you.
Yes. But it's just, something generic from GarageBand. So we would love to, to have our own theme song. So if any of you talented individuals out there want to, come up with a theme song for us, go for it. Just send your submissions in. And I think it's going to be, however long we have the theme right now. And if it could be even longer so we can talk under it for a minute past that point, that'd be great. So just send your submissions in to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com, and we'll choose a good one and hopefully use it. So, and I should also mention that we're going to be live on Saturday the 14th on TalkShoe, and I think that's, what is that, 5 p.m. Pacific? Yes, 5 p.m. Pacific. And we're going to have the guys from the 2008 blog on, and they are the guys who did mobile chat for jailbroke iPhones, and I think we're going to have two guys on there. So we're going to talk to some developers and hopefully get their opinions on all the newly announced stuff from WWDC and talk to them about their app and their plans for that and all that good stuff. So don't miss that show. And I think that's it. Another episode of the iPhone Alley podcast is out the door.
An internet.
We may be changing, intros, but we're definitely keeping this. This is my favorite.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do?
Tell us, Steve, what are we going to do?
So what are we going to do?
It would have been really cool if the new iPhone had come with a stylus. Right?
Yeah, and a stylus. It comes out of the recessed headset, Jack.
No.
We'd still give him credit for the cool music. We just have Jeff.
Who wants a stylus?
It's called artistic license. It was a flash of inspiration, just out of the blue.
made on a Mac, mother.
It totally worked.
It totally works. No, it's good.
Made on a Mac.